my expectation is that even if we have a rise of the radical left in the next European Parliament, this will not change the direction of the EU to enlargement.
Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
It's a great pleasure to host you, Maria, on this week's episode of Visegrad Insight podcast. Maria Simeonova is the expert of European Council Foreign Relations Bulgaria, focusing by large on the topic of enlargement and Western Balkans. And this week, we decided to focus on what seems the focus of all EU leaders, which is the upcoming strategic agenda. We had a number of consultations in Warsaw, in Vienna, in Rome, previously also in other capitals of Europe, where Charles Michel is gathering for informal dinner discussions, politicians, the prime ministers, presidents, and sets eyes on the upcoming strategy. Known earlier as the Granada Declaration, something that EU leaders have worked for and adopted during the Spanish presidency in the middle of last year. And then it seems, according to the leaks that we also laid out our eyes on, that strategic agenda is now vastly changing. Maybe we start with explaining why it is important right now, and what is the strategic agenda? Maria?
Hello, Wojciech, and thank you very much for inviting me to your podcast to discuss this very timely and important issue that will gain more and more attention in the following days. So overall, the EU strategic agenda is an effort by the leaders across the EU member states to outline the priorities of the European Union for the next 5 years. So it is a document which is supposed to give strategic guidance for the institutions that will be formed within the next political cycle. And this will happen after the European Parliament elections scheduled for June throughout the European Union. The document is put together, as I said, around the European Parliament elections in order to address the public attitudes throughout Europe among the European citizens. And the negotiations for its creation basically are led by the President of the European Council. This is why, as you mentioned, Charles Michel has been organizing discussions across the EU capitals with the purpose to give a direction for the European Union for the next 5 years. Overall, the strategic agenda is a document which showcases political will. And after the turbulent 2 years since the war in Ukraine started, and ahead of what promises to be a very challenging year, filled with many elections globally, but also in Europe, it will be of big importance to read the document, which will display the crossing points of the leaders in the EU. But also those leaders bring to the table the concerns of their own citizens. So in a way, the strategic agenda is an instrument that showcases where the big EU strategic thinking meets the public expectations. On a more technical level, the strategic agenda can also be looked at as an instrument that can prevent blockages within the Council. We often discuss vetoes by single member states. Unfortunately, using the veto power is turning into some kind of a threatening tool, be it in the domains of enlargement, migrations, or the sanctions against Russia. So from this perspective, the strategic agenda can be looked at as an instrument for policy coherence. And as you said, we are approaching the end of this whole process that leads to the formulation of the strategic agenda for the period 2024-2029. The process started almost a year ago with a letter of President Charles Michel, which outlined 4 main areas, but these were just tentative directions. And we see that with the process of its development, they can change. What was important also from the first letter that Charles Michel submitted was that the overarching priorities, resilience and competitiveness, energy security and defense, and the geopolitical positioning of the European Union, they have to be projected through the prism of two issues, which are the need to protect our common values and the need to enlarge. So basically, since June last year, the enlargement turned as a big topic. The strategic agenda was the main topic at the Granada summit in October last year as well. And as you said, consultations have been taking place in Croatia, in Germany, in France, in Denmark, Lithuania, Romania, also here in Warsaw and Vienna.
Yeah, I will step in here and indeed in the Visegrad Inside Weekly Outlook on Monday, we laid again eyes on the leaked document, and we brought forward the attention of the last meetings that happened in Warsaw, in Vienna, in Romania, also in Bucharest. And this week we have a special summit with a potentially, we are expecting that strategic agenda document will be discussed and the priorities will be perhaps even released to the public. We don't know that, but there is a speculation about it. Now, in this document, as you rightly pointed out, there are two main fundamental priorities for the European Union, which is the future of enlargement and EU values. But I'll explain what is the structure of the leaked document. There is a strong and secure Europe priority under which we have 4 points. One of that is well-prepared enlargement. And there are points in it that suggest that there is a buildup of a political will to support, enhance, and push forward for the project of enlargement, of getting new member states within the perspective of next year, which will also come with additional funding. The focus of funding here is important. And that's part of the package of Strong and Secure Europe, Section 1, next to coherent influential external action. This geopolitical reference can be brought back with a very strong points that are unprecedented in the EU as a strategic agenda, with strategic action, security, defense, both the spending, posture, preparedness, including points on terrorism, violent extremism, internal security, which I think Union is now bracing itself for the turbulent world that we see, and the comprehensive focus on migration. Section 2 is all about the prosperous, competitive Europe, which is important, and it will be discussed also around the Mario Draghi report, also to be released this week. So we leave it for later to assess as a separate chapter, important and fundamental for all the others. And I mean, by all the others, I mean three. Point number three, which was lacking in Granada Declaration, despite the reference to EU values, is a free and democratic Europe. Such a straightforward internal focus on our democracies, making them resilient, developed through upholding the rule of law, not just for the commercial global reasons, which seemed to be the wording and focus of the Granada Declaration before, and living up to the values that's more like the self-declaration of political leaders to demonstrate leadership in global challenges, including governance, and supporting global peace and stability. These are, you would say, fundamental for the existence of the EU, but also they find their way into the points of the leaked document and probably will be there at the end, with a lot of ambition also to pay attention to balancing the powers of the EU institutions and keeping the union together and working. We focus on the work. But I am particularly happy that we have democratic security language inserted. This is something we advocated for a long time. And then I wanted to pick your brain on the enlargement. We have also released together with your participation the report Cost of Non-Enlargement last week, and we are this week also in Warsaw organizing closed-door conference, Europe Future Forum, a preparation on getting our mindset in Poland and in across Central Eastern Europe on the European priorities, where enlargement is such an important topic. Not to say that it wasn't in the past years, but somehow it was under-delivering, it was dull and long, and actually happened. It happened that it became more prominent after the as a response to Russian invasion in Ukraine. But what are the conclusions as we see from the leaked document and your expectations overall of how important enlargement will be in the upcoming agenda, including priorities of how to fund an enlarged union?
Thank you, Wojciech, for this question. First of all, I'd like to say that my expectation is that the new strategic agenda will inevitably be a projection of what changed in the EU strategic thinking following Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. But it will also reflect this expected change in the transatlantic relations in case of a Donald Trump return to the White House. So basically, the war changed drastically previous perceptions. It mostly changed the way Europeans think about hard and soft power. And currently, we're facing a severe security threat. And in Poland, this is one of the countries where it is mostly felt. So therefore, of course, the leaders are expected to push for Europe's security and defense industry and to basically use all possible instruments and tools in order to fill out with substance what is meant by global engagement of the EU with the rest of the world. So in terms of enlargement, this lead document has three pillars, but we still don't know if this is going to be the document which will be presented, adopted in June. But I'm not surprised that enlargement is in it and that there is a very strong focus on it. You're right to point out that before the war in Ukraine, we were always finding ourselves saying that the enlargement is at an impasse and how to break that impasse, how to break the deadlock in enlargement. So these were the picky words. The war in Ukraine changed dramatically how the EU thinks about enlargement, but also it made it realize of the geopolitical urgency to advance and to progress on that front. The conversation has not been easy, but I think what we were lacking before the war is on the table right now, and this is the political will. So there is the clear realization among the European leaders that if the European Union doesn't enlarge, it will have to be faced with further security challenges in the countries from its neighborhood. So it would be addressing ad hoc crisis and becoming more like in a crisis mood. So enlargement must take place. The question is not whether it should, but how it should happen. And the strategic agenda, my expectation is that it will reflect all the elements on which the EU leaders will agree based also on the public perceptions in their countries, even though I think that enlargement does not have the potential to become contentious issue within the societies, especially if we're talking about the Western Balkans. I will focus on the Western Balkans in this case. And if I can go back to March this year, there is a communique by the European Commission which outlines all those important debates that are supposed to take place in the framework of the future EU enlargement. And the communication addresses the concerns, which are mostly related to how do we make sure that the candidate countries will advance on important reforms, rule of law, judicial reforms, democratic principles, and so on. It also addresses policies. So therefore, what is needed to be done in those candidate countries in terms of sectoral policies. And here we read about enhanced connectivity, climate and environment commitments, improving food quality and security, migration and border management. So these are the areas where the EU leaders will have to work with the candidate countries. And a closer look, tells us that the EU is in a possession of the instruments that it has to use in order to advance of those policies that will put the region closer to the EU itself. Be it connectivity, we have the regional cooperation market, we have for climate and environment, we have the green agenda for the Western Balkans, for example, which the EU can use to advance on that front. Migration and border management, the new migration pact that is expected to be adopted by the Council, also sets clear principles on how the EU should work on its external borders and so on and so forth. The communication also addresses the budget issue, the governance issue, which will be very important because here we're talking about potential institutional reforms. So this is the homework that the EU member states will have to do. Where the EU is not only expecting results from the candidate countries, but there is the sentence reads that also the EU itself has to work. And here I would say that the European Commission will have to start working more closely with the member states in order to assess their preparedness to deliver on all these challenging issues.
That's a great assessment of the policies and the institutional preparedness. I'll refer back to what we know from the leak document. One of the points on the well-prepared enlargement reads like this: use possibilities for the gradual integration of candidate countries by building on the existing legal instruments and exploring new ones. How I read that is that there is a political will to experiment, innovate, and push forward. And in the strategic agenda, if that is the wording, and if that wording reflects indeed the political mindset of the prime ministers at the table across Europe and eventually in Brussels when they meet for the Council final decision, that means that there is going to be a push that is going to bypass certain obstacles that are in fact built in also in the institutional and policy process. And we've seen this everlasting ping pong between number of countries which are candidates and the EU institutions. We've seen 20 years or more of enlarging process that did not happen and demonstrates rather not just institutional but political failure that has been exploited in a number of cases, especially through elections, by critics of the European project, nationalists of rebranded themselves as Euro-skeptic, from Euro-skeptic to Euro-realist and whatnot. But essentially, those who would say Europe is done as a political process of enlarging, integrating, and we have seen that in the elections of Mr. Wilders, whose message essentially has been built on such preconception of basically having a mistake in the past of enlarging to Eastern Europe and definitely opposing future enlargement. We see that in the Eurosceptic populist or simply nationalist forces across Central Eastern Europe who, like Mr. Orban and his nomination for the commissioner, did nothing to enlarge and actually exploited all the institutional weaknesses of the past 5 years in the commission, where Commissioner Farhege, responsible for enlargement, had zero achievement in terms of making real enlargement happen, but perfectly milled all the institutional processes and innovated policies and, you know, put some more money on the table. It's a very important portfolio. So in this context, I want to ask you the final question. What are the challenges to this kind of agenda setting related specifically to enlargement in the context of upcoming European elections, portfolios of commissioners, maybe even, if you wish, but it's still a longer shot, Polish presidency in the EU Council or any national elections?
So I think the biggest challenge is how to bring all these pieces together, which will have as a result, you know, enlarging in a very constructive way. Let's say, I really like what you said about experiment and innovate. And this is exactly what many analysts and colleagues of mine have been doing in the past years. As the enlargement was stuck, many analysts came up with ideas such as the staged accession, and we've discussed it in details, and you touch upon it in one of the recent reports, Costs of Non-Enlargement, and I take the opportunity to congratulate you for this very interesting report, which looks at the various scenarios. So we have the tools, we have the ideas, we have the creative ideas on the table. What we need to do is to start, you know, building a roadmap of how to bring them together. What are the actors that we need to work with? Which member states, what role will have to play in this whole debate? And here I will mention as a factor, I will start from the end, the Polish presidency of the Council in 2025. I'm not opposed, so maybe that's, I'm not the best person to be talking about it, but my overview on what the government of Prime Minister Tusk has been doing is that he's been trying to navigate all these complicated issues and trying to find, to apply always a constructive approach. And I think that Poland can do exactly this during its presidency. Even though the Western Balkans have not been at the main focus of the Polish policy, I think that there can be a shift overnight. Why? Because, as we said, there is an urgency. And I think that the new government will want to put forward a constructive and realistic approach to enlargement. I see it as being stuck between the need to bring forward, to bring Poland back to the European mainstream. And on the other hand, the negative legacy from the previous illiberal government here, which really distanced the Polish society from the big European debates. But this is why I expect that the Tusk government will have like a sobering role in the whole debate, navigating through realities outlined in the treaties, the geopolitical urgency, and the moods in the capitals. The Weimar format, which is gaining more and more popularity, is another platform that can be used by Poland to, you know, play this mediation role even between Berlin and Paris. So this is in terms of the potential Polish role. And the European Parliament elections, definitely, they will also impact in some way. My expectation is that even if we have a rise of the radical left in the next European Parliament, this will not change the direction of the EU to enlargement. I think that the geopolitical urgency have been cemented in Brussels, in the member states. And even if we have more radical voices in the next parliament, I think that they will be aiming at short-term, narrow political goals, but they will not be able to change this firm direction. And I think I'm the optimist. I'm very optimistic right now. But looking at this geopolitical urgency, looking at all the ideas on the table, I think that we are getting there. And this the lessons learned from the previous enlargement will be taken into consideration. What we need is for all member states to realize what role they can play in order to support the countries from the Western Balkans to become full-fledged members, or at least to achieve some success until 2030.
That was Maria Simeonova, ECFR Bulgaria, Sofia, also participating in Europe Future Forum that is taking place today on 16th of April in Warsaw. Thank you very much. My name is Wojciech Przybylski, and I do recommend again the Cost of Non-Enlargement report that we touched upon, that is the foundation for a political and policy discussion in Europe on the enlargement future, the format of the conference, which we'll link in the podcast, and the weekly outlook, in which we pay attention to the strategic EU agenda discussions, consultations, and speculate on the upcoming summit in Brussels. Thank you very much for listening. Stay tuned, and until next week.